Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. Let's hear from our fearless leader.
And I wonder, what is your message to Hezbollah and its backer, Iran?
Don't.
I'm sure you know that Iran attacked Israel over the weekend. I'm one of those that thought that we were about to be in a full-blown war. Of course, I didn't have the entire story, like the fact that there was plenty of warning given, and the fact that apparently we just have all of the capability to knock all these things out of the sky. I'll be honest with you, pretty cool to see, you know, 200-300 drones and missiles and rockets go up, and I think 99% of them got shot down. There was a little bit of damage that happened, but not a ton. As far as we know, as far as all the information that we have, and I'm sure that that's all correct, but that happened. I do have this story here that I want to go into about how all the sides kind of gain from this, and I'm going to tell you what I hope happens after this, but what's more than likely going to happen after this. We'll find out, I'm sure. You know, we don't play the videos with the sirens and all that, but we definitely saw a lot of videos of missile and drone intercepts happening over the skies. A pretty crazy thing. You know, I don't remember watching the hundreds of things launched at one of our allies and everyone working together to try to shoot it all down. So that was one of the first times I've seen something like that. The story from the AP goes into how everyone benefited from this. Now, I kind of disagree with what they had to say because I don't think Iran really benefited from this. If I was Iran, I'd be a little bit embarrassed. But they are the ones that gave all the warning, which is a weird fact as well. Like, they seem to be working pretty hard to make sure that this doesn't actually escalate. Like any political, like any government, they had to retaliate. They had to respond, I guess, to seven of their people getting killed. They had to do something, but they gave plenty of warning that this was going to happen, so much warning that our planes, Israel's planes, were already up there in the air. We knew to be looking for it, and everyone was ready to shoot it down. I do wonder what would happen if there wasn't any warning and everyone was not ready for when these things were about to come across, how different that would have been, and hopefully we don't actually find out. In this piece from the AP, they say Israel's response could restore faith in its military. After more than 300 drones and missiles headed towards Israel in the early hours of Sunday, the country was able to successfully put to the test its aerial defense array, which, along with help from allies, blocked 99% of the projectiles and prevented any major damage. By contrast, Israel's military had suffered a bruising defeat at the hands of a far less equipped enemy when Hamas stormed from Gaza into Israel on October 7th. That was a major blow to Israel's image as a regional military powerhouse and shattered any sense of invincibility. The response to Iran's attack could be what restores faith in the country's military, even as its forces are bogged down in Gaza more than 6 months after the war began. Israel's also boasted about the coalition of forces that helped it repel the Iranian assault. It's a much-needed show of support at a time when Israel is at its most isolated because of concerns surrounding its conduct during the war against Hamas. They say it's also a win for Iran because Iran showed its might. I agree a little bit less with this one, with the whole Iran showing its might thing. They did send a lot of things over, but they didn't really do any damage. And I'm not sure that that's going to be perceived as a win in their country, unless, of course, they're showing people in their country a very different version of the events from the version of events that we've seen from our news. But they say Iran vowed repeatedly it would respond to an apparent Israeli strike on an Iranian diplomatic compound in Damascus that killed two generals. Sunday's assault allowed Iran to show to its citizens that it won't stand by when its assets are attacked and that it was serious when it threatened revenge. With its strike, Iran was able to exhibit its fierce firepower, instill fear in some Israelis, and disrupt the lives of many through school cancellations. But with little damage actually caused in Israel, Iran might hope that any response will be measured. Several hours after it launched the drones and missiles, Iran said the operation was over. Once again, it kind of sounds like they felt like they had to do this. They had to respond to what Israel did, hitting their consulate and killing seven other people, including two of their generals. Apparently, one of the generals was also instrumental in the attack on October 7th. And so that's one of the main reasons they were going after that person. But they had to do something. They did something. And now they say that the operation is over. They don't want it to go further. One of the great things about this, you know, people look at money as a bad thing, but it would be really bad financially for Iran to push this into an all-out war. You're talking sanctions, trade embargo. You're talking all kinds of stuff that would hurt them financially. And what they're deciding is, actually, it's better for us to maintain some type of peace so we can keep selling our oil on the markets. It would be really bad for us if this happened. The United States, I guess, got a win also. The U.S. was a key player in repelling the assault, demonstrating to its allies around the world the power and reliability of American support. Now, as Israel mulls how and whether to respond, that alliance will be put to the test, with the Biden administration seeking to exert its leverage on Israel and prevent it from carrying out a response that might worsen the conflict. That is the next thing that we'll talk about after this piece. They also say that Hamas might benefit. So this is a win-win-win-win missile strike. But we don't get a whole lot of those, right? But apparently that's what this was. Hamas, which is backed by Iran, welcomed the strike. Since launching its October 7th attack, Hamas had hoped that regional partners might come to its assistance and drag Israel into a broader war. While some have done, including the Iranian-backed Hezbollah in Lebanon and Yemen's Houthis, Iran had not directly entered the fray until Sunday. Hamas could hope that the attack is the first salvo in deeper Iranian engagement in the war in Gaza. It also could hope that violence in the West Bank, where an Israeli team was killed in settlers' rampage in Palestinian towns, continues to heat up. At the very least, Iran's attack may have emboldened Hamas to dig in its heels in current negotiations over a ceasefire, hoping the increased military pressure on Israel might lead it to accept the militant group's harder line terms for a deal. So, like I said, win-win, win-win for everyone. The question now, is Israel going to do something in retaliation for this? As Charlie and I, Charlie's the co-host, by the way, if you've never listened before, he's not here right now. Here's a picture of what his chair looks like. Just an empty chair right there. As Charlie and I are fond of saying, there's always retaliations, and then there's a retaliation for the retaliation. Like, you could say, well, Israel has to hit Iran right now. Look at what they just did over the weekend. You could say, well, Iran needed to hit Israel. Look at what happened. Israel just bombed their consulate and killed seven other people. Or you could say Israel had to hit those people because look at all of the Iranian-backed militias and look at how these people helped with October 7th. Or you could say those people need to do that because, I don't know, Israel's war in 70, whatever. And you could just keep tracing it all the way back to the time that Israel became a country, and then that's where everyone's really mad about it. I honestly don't know if this violence is ever going to stop because people are just clearly not happy that Israel is there. So I don't have any personal hopes of just having peace in this region and not always having things like this going on. The question now is Israel going to de-escalate or are they going to retaliate? If I could talk to Israel right now, okay, let's just call it even, okay? They actually gave you the ability to show the world that you could defend an attack where hundreds of more advanced missiles and drones were sent at you and you were able to shoot down almost all of them. Like, that's pretty cool, right? See the videos online? That's pretty cool. Who's going to mess with you? Iran just launched hundreds of things at you and you shot down almost all of them. This is a win. And this is after you took out seven of their people at a consulate in a place where you're not really supposed to bomb those kinds of places. And this is the retaliation. Okay. I think a 7-year-old girl got critically injured, head trauma, something like that. There was some damage to a base. And other than that, why don't we just call it good? Some answers to that could be pretty bad. Maybe they want a wider war. Maybe Israel wants a wider war. Do they want to drag America into a wider war with them? It's possible. It really is possible. But I think they need to call it good and not do anything after this.
If they do anything after this, it means that they do actually want a war with Iran and they want to drag us into it. That is my opinion on the matter. They need to not do that. Okay, they already went. I think many people could agree they've gone a little bit too far with this whole killing everyone in Gaza thing. You know, maybe a little too far with that. And they could have done more targeted strikes and spent more time going after those people and saving more hostages. But instead, you know, just kind of went with the carpet bomb route. You know, different strokes for different folks. You know, it's not on me to run their foreign policy for them. I don't want to be involved in the war, and I'm old, okay? I'm too old for the draft, so that's fine. But I don't think that we want to be in a war with Iran. It would be very different from the other wars that we've had. Would we win it? Sure, we'd win it. But they're way more advanced than the other people that we've had to fight against in the past, at least in my lifetime, anyway. It would not be good. And then what is the actual outcome of that? Where is your bright side there? We don't want the actual war with Iran. It's just not a good idea. So I hope that Biden also says don't to Netanyahu right now when he's talking about retaliating for this. I know that they're meeting and trying to decide what they're going to do. They haven't decided yet. Potentially could come pretty soon, like today or tomorrow, if they are going to respond. So we might see by the next episode, maybe by tomorrow, we'll know what's going to happen. The other thing, you know, I saw a couple people posting about what Trump said to Iran at one point in time. I actually think, I know as a libertarian, I'm against war. I still think that having a leader, oh man, I hate talking about Trump positively, but I do want to give an example here. I think having a leader that people believe could be crazy or is just potentially cool with doing whatever to make himself look good. Let's just assume it's a narcissistic reason. Okay, let's not even say it's to protect the American people or interests or whatever, but to make himself look good. I do think that it's a good thing to have a leader who projects strength to potentially foreign adversaries. So like when he said, never, ever threaten the United States again, or you have to understand this is in all caps. Okay, so it's very important, very forceful, all caps. Never, ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious. For some reason, happen to think that things like that are okay. Maybe the all caps is a little bit too far. Let's all agree all caps is too much. But I think there's no cap in this statement right here, and I think everyone believed him also. Everyone noticed that we didn't really have a lot of this stuff going on. Sure, we had our wars that we were already doing. You know, we've always got wars that we're already doing. But it's not like Russia attacked Ukraine while Trump was president, which is weird considering that Trump was a Putin plant. You think he would have attacked Ukraine while Trump was president. I don't know. That one's weird. Maybe the timing was off. They thought he was going to win a second term, something like that. You didn't have Iran launching all these missiles at Israel. You didn't have October 7th happen. Maybe having a guy that people think is crazy enough to do anything is actually valuable on the world stage. We'll move on to what's going to affect us immediately in the fact that House Speaker Mike Johnson says he's going to push for aid to Israel and Ukraine this week. So he's turned around on this one, been holding back on that bill. But you might as well not let a good crisis go to waste. You know, he's fresh off of flip-flopping on FISA, which, by the way, the warrant amendment did not pass with FISA. I wish I would have been wrong about that one, but I believe he cast a tie-breaking vote. It was 212 to 212, and he was the tiebreaker on it. But now we're going to make sure we can send aid to Israel and Ukraine. And why not do that while everyone is talking about Israel getting attacked by Iran? And so now we need to make sure we send them a bunch of money, because we all know that Israel's major problem has been that they don't have any money. And who does have a lot of money? The United States. Apparently. I guess that's what that means. House Speaker Mike Johnson said Sunday he will try to advance wartime aid for Israel this week as he attempts the difficult task of winning House approval for a national security package that also includes funding for Ukraine and allies in Asia. The Republican speaker has sat for 2 months on a $95 billion supplemental package that would send support to the U.S. allies, as well as provide humanitarian aid for civilians in Ukraine and Gaza, and funding to replenish U.S. weapons provided to Taiwan. The attack by Iran on Israel early Sunday further ratcheted up the pressure on Johnson, but also gave him an opportunity to underscore the urgency of approval for the funding. The opportunity, the crisis, and the opportunity. Johnson told Fox News Sunday Morning Futures that he and Republicans understand the necessity of standing with Israel, and he would try this week to advance the aid. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer at a news conference also said that Joe Biden held a phone call Sunday with top Republicans and Democrats in the House and Senate, including Johnson. Schumer said there was consensus among all the leaders that we had to help Israel and help Ukraine, and now hopefully we can work that out and get this done next week. It's vital for the future of Ukraine, for Israel, and the West, Schumer said. So as we know, we get the strike against Israel over the weekend, and now all of a sudden there is renewed urgency for passing this bill, potentially the $95 billion bill, maybe the smaller one that just has Ukraine and Israel included in it. But it's going to be in the billions, maybe $75 billion, maybe $95 billion. I don't know. Maybe they take the opportunity and make it even more. We'll see what happens this week. Let's talk about taxes. I'm no foreign policy expert, but I just wanted to talk about what happened over the weekend. I truly hope it doesn't escalate. And I, you know, no matter what your thoughts on the war in Gaza and all that, you know, it's good that all of those things were shot down like that. That's a good thing. It was cool to see that done. And you didn't want to see hundreds of rockets and drones landing in Israel. Hopefully, no matter what side of the Israel-Gaza conflict you come down on. So those are my thoughts on that. It's currently April 15th, and we'd be a terrible libertarian podcast if we didn't talk about taxation and the fact that taxation is theft. We're not going to do the normal taxation and theft episode. I'm sure most of you know our views on this. You earn money justly, voluntarily in our economy. You trade what you have that is valuable. Maybe it's a product. Maybe it's a service. Maybe it's your labor. You earn compensation for that. You spend your time doing whatever that is, your limited amount of time, your fixed amount of time that you have on this planet as a human being. You spend your time creating that value, and then the U.S. government just comes in and takes basically whatever portion of that they deem necessary for whatever it is they want to do. Maybe it's housing and urban development. Maybe it's shooting down missiles in the sky over Israel. So taxation is theft, the bottom line. I wanted to talk about the current state of taxation and where the American people are when it comes to taxation. We're going to cover it from that angle because I've seen some interesting polls lately. Just as a little state of the union right now, the 2023 fiscal year, we spent $6.13 trillion, 23% of our GDP, which was $26 trillion. So we spent 23% of GDP in fiscal year 2023. That has gone up a lot. We'll talk about it. Okay, but that's a bunch. We got that big COVID bump. The economy got that big COVID bump, if you know what I'm talking about. And why come back? Why go back to the way things used to be when we can spend so much more money now? I don't know. I don't want to do it either, guys. Let's just keep spending money. But I saw some polls, and at first I was like, well, this could be like a white pill moment right here. Look at this. Americans are unhappy with taxation. That's a good thing. They should be unhappy with taxation. It turns out they are. They're almost there. We're almost right. More and more Americans hate taxes, and they especially hate federal income taxes. So maybe the good news there is that we're on the right path, except for the fact that those people just think that it should be coming from rich people instead of them, unfortunately. Americans' views on federal income taxes have worsened. 6 in 10 Americans say the amount of federal income tax they pay is too high, a level last seen in 2001. 46% believe the income tax they pay is fair, which ties 1999's level. 51% say their income taxes are not fair. So now more Americans say that their income taxes are not fair compared with the people who say that it's fair. And of course, this is a group of people that they surveyed. You guys know how surveys work. They didn't ask 300 million people how they felt about it or whatever. They asked 2,000 people. More Americans say federal income tax is the worst or the least fair tax, just edging out the local property tax. So this is some of those things in chart form from Gallup right now. This is Americans' opinions on federal income taxes they pay. By the way, if you're listening right now, this is going to be uploaded to YouTube immediately. I'm actually currently streaming to YouTube, only I have it set to private, so I'm just going to switch it to public afterwards. So this video will already be here so you can see the charts and the graphs that I'm going through, and that'll probably help as you're watching. So 60% of Americans believe that the federal income tax they pay is too high. 36% of Americans believe that it's about right. And 3% say that their federal income tax is too low. Luckily, there's an easy solution for that. Just send in more money. Problem solved. Tax fairness, as we just said, 51% of the people say it's not fair. 46% of the people say that it is fair. Okay. It would be good. This news could be good, except for what people actually want to do about the whole thing. We'll get to that here in a second. Now, what's the worst tax? In 2023, 34% of these same respondents said that the federal income tax is the worst tax. Local property tax was the next one, 29% saying that that was the worst tax. State income taxes was the next at 14%, state sales tax at 12%, and federal social security tax at 10%. After that, well, we need to bump that number up for sure, along with the state income tax, and maybe less people be upset about the state sales tax. I don't know. I always feel great, and I always feel the need to post a screenshot, although I didn't this time around. I did my taxes over the weekend. And it's always great when you get to that portion of the website. We use Free Tax USA. Elizabeth Warren hasn't provided me with that free tax website yet. So I just use a free tax website, one that already exists that we don't have to spend billions of dollars to make, but whatever. We get to the state tax portion, and it asks you what state you live in. And I put Tennessee. And it's like, well, did you earn income outside of Tennessee? Did you live outside of Tennessee any time during this year? And I'm like, no. And it says, okay, you don't owe any taxes. That's always pretty cool. The trade-off on that is that we have a 9.5% sales tax here in Davidson County, Metro Nashville area where I live. And that's a pretty high sales tax. Good news is when I go to visit my family in Illinois, I can just buy big items up there in Illinois at a 6.5% sales tax, and I come back home to Tennessee where I don't pay any income tax and can save you a little bit of money. Okay? That's just a little life hack for you guys. Coming right up, we're going to talk more about taxes, gun rights, and dumb leap of the week.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire fireplace grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA News Update. Prosecutors in former President Trump's New York hush money trial are seeking contempt charges. They allege he breached a gag order via recent social media posts. Trump's defense attorneys asserts he was just responding to attacks from Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. A hearing to address the motion is scheduled for next week. Attorney General Merrick Garland says he has full confidence in President Biden's mental capacity, addressing concerns raised by special counsel Robert Hur's report. Hur described Biden as an elderly man with a poor memory.
So if you're asking me about my own observations, I have complete confidence in the president.
Garland, during a House hearing, said he's witnessed Biden effectively lead meetings on complex national issues. A new Iowa law signed by Governor Kim Reynolds criminalizes illegal immigration. State officers can now arrest previously deported migrants. Reynolds blames the Biden administration for neglecting border security. John Schaefer, USA News.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
I need to pay my taxes. What are my payment options?
The IRS has several options for paying your taxes. You can pay with IRS Direct Pay, a debit or credit card, or with an electronic funds withdrawal when you e-file your return. If you can't pay the full amount, consider paying over time with an online payment agreement or our Offer in Compromise program. Both tools are available on IRS.gov. Go to IRS.gov/payment to find an option that is best suited for you.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutraMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutritious meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutraMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com. NutraMedical.com for the whole family.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Liberty Unite with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. We've been going through Americans' views on taxes. Is it good news? Is it bad news? I don't know. Let's go through some more polls. Let's see. From a UChicago Harris AP NORC poll, among U.S. adults, less than a quarter believe they receive valuable services from paying local property tax, state sales tax, or federal income tax. Less than a quarter of these respondents on this poll believe that they receive valuable services from paying these taxes. So they think their taxes are too high. They think that they don't receive valuable services from these taxes. I think it's time to make the argument that taxation is theft and we need to get rid of taxes, right? That's what I hear. Nearly two-thirds say local property tax, federal income tax, or state sales taxes are too high. Republicans are more likely than Democrats to say local property taxes or federal income taxes are unfair. Makes sense. Kind of tracks, right? Sounds right to me. Here's where the next polls start to worry me, because we see that people think taxes are unfair. They think they're paying too much in taxes. They think that they're not getting the value from their taxes for what they're paying. And then you poll a bunch of people last month. Now, these are 5,000 registered voters in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. So swing states, another way to say that. Please indicate if you support or oppose the following tax policies. Raise taxes on billionaires. 70% of the respondents, a little more than 70% of the respondents, strongly support raising taxes on billionaires. Another like 10% say they don't know or don't have an opinion. And only about 20% say that they somewhat or strongly oppose this idea. Raise taxes on those making $400,000 plus. If you can believe this, this number is actually higher. So instead of 70, it's like 72% think you should raise taxes on those making more than $400,000.
cut individual tax rates across income groups. About 68% say that we should cut individual tax rates across all the income groups at the same time. 50% of the respondents say that we should raise the corporate tax rate. 50% of the respondents say that we should put 60% tariffs on Chinese imports. And 50% of the respondents say that we should do a universal 10% tariff on all imports. And about 100% of these people are dumb AF. So, let's go through a couple of these things. No, you know what? I'll just tell you something for all six of them immediately. Doing any of these things would make your standard of living worse. It would raise the prices of all of your goods and all of your services if you do any of those things. Raising taxes on billionaires specifically might actually decrease investment in the United States, might actually stop people from becoming billionaires or decrease incentives or cause people to move elsewhere. If you think being a billionaire is a bad thing, that might sound good to you. But when I hear about a billionaire, you know what I think? What did they do to be worth $1 billion? Most of the time, when you look at a person who's worth $1 billion, they created something that added a lot of value to millions or billions of people's lives. And so I don't think being a billionaire is a bad thing. What you tax, you get less of. I don't want to raise taxes on billionaires. If you're going to raise taxes on those making $400,000 plus and cut individual tax rates across income groups, which is almost the same number, very interesting. Raising corporate tax rates, corporations don't pay taxes. Their customers pay taxes. Taxes are just an expense, like shipping, like materials, taxes. They're just expenses on the business. And then they charge a profit on top of that, whatever percentage it is that they're trying to get. 60% tariff on Chinese imports would raise prices drastically for a lot of people who are buying things. Universal 10% tariff on imports would raise prices for all of our goods and services as well. These are terrible ideas. Please indicate if you support or oppose. Okay, so this is specifically who supported or opposed raising taxes on billionaires. Liberals, or people on the left, or Democrats, because the word liberal means something different these days. 85% of those people supported raising taxes on billionaires. Okay, you might be like, okay, yeah, that sounds about right. Also, almost 60% of Republicans supported raising taxes on billionaires as well. It's one of the few things that's bipartisan. And I say this every time as well, and I say that I say it every time that we talk about it. One of our very first episodes, back when we were a show called The Big Freedom Show, one of the very first things I ever talked about on this podcast was that the danger I saw lurking ahead was that the only thing the left and the right could agree on was that they hated rich people. It was one of our very first episodes, one of the very first things I ever talked about. Over 1,200 episodes ago, was that I saw that the left and the right both hated rich people. And that is still true right now. Let's move on just a little bit more. Okay. As tax day approaches, the vast majority of Americans blame the rich for the taxes they pay, not poor Americans. But let's see. Overall, rich Americans and big corporations who pay less than their fair share. So you're saying, who do you blame for the tax that you have to pay? Now, you might think that you'd blame the federal government because they tax you. Or you might say, well, how about the fact that they spend so much more money than they take in and they never decrease their spending, unless, of course, you're coming from like the biggest spending year ever in human history for anyone. Then you say you decrease spending a little bit after that. You might blame them for the taxes that you pay, but no, it's actually rich Americans and big corporations paying less than their fair share. 86% of Democrats said that. 55% of Republicans blame rich Americans and big corporations paying less than their fair share. That's interesting. So let's talk about the billionaires for a minute. As of April 1st of 2024, according to Americans for Tax Fairness, the wealth of the billionaires in the United States was $5.8 trillion. It's a lot of money. I'm not going to argue that that's not a lot of money. In 2017, by the way, that number was $2.9 trillion. If I could try and do some quick math on that, that is roughly double. And so this is one of the reasons that you might blame these billionaires somehow. If you blame them, it's because some people have been lying to you about a lot of things, but whatever. $5.8 trillion. A really interesting fact about that that we started with is that in 2023, we spent $6.13 trillion. The wealth of all of the billionaires, as of 2 weeks ago, is $5.8 trillion. Less than the total amount that the U.S. government spends in 1 year. So as you know, what I can say after this, what people would normally say after this, you could take all of their money, 100% of it, and it would not even fund the U.S. government for 1 year. You know what would actually happen if you took all of their money? Our spending would go up. Maybe not the full $5.9 or $5.8 trillion, but our spending would just go up, and you would actually fund way less. You know what else would happen? Our entire economy would crash because those people are billionaires for a reason, and you would actually just have to take – you'd actually have to seize everyone's retirements. So what I don't understand is where people think they're going to get this money when they talk about taxing the billionaires. First off, the billionaires are billionaires because they have a piece of paper that says they own a share of a stock in a company. That company is worth that amount of money because millions of people have invested their retirements into that company. And not just retirements, other people that are investors as well. But a lot of people have retirements, pensions, 401ks, IRAs, stuff like that. Where do they think the money is actually going to come from? It would destroy the entire economy if you did that kind of thing. Maybe they want to do that. Maybe they just want to tax like 10% of it. Nate, no one's saying you should take all the wealth of all the billionaires. Okay. We're going to take 10% of it? That's great. How much money is that? Someone give me a number crunch. What's that going to float us for, like 3 weeks? A month? Maybe a month? They could float us for that amount of time? I don't know. And then what? You still destroyed the economy at that time, by the way, because people have to sell all their shares in the companies to even be able to give you that money. The point of the matter is, people are blaming billionaires, but that's not where the problem is. The problem is that the government keeps spending money, and it keeps spending more money than they take in. They can't simply, you got to simply do one thing. You got to spend less money than you take in. All right, let's go through some more of this stuff. Because remember, people blame rich people. They are upset with taxes. They think they pay too much in taxes. They're not getting the value that they even pay from their taxes. And who do they blame for the taxes that they pay, the amount that they pay? They blame rich people. What about average federal tax rates by income group? This is from the Congressional Budget Office. Now, this is as of 2019. Maybe this has just drastically changed since 2019. The lowest quintile of income earners, their average federal tax rate was 0.5%. Okay? The next quintile up was about 9%. The middle quintile was about 13%. The fourth quintile was at about 17%. And then the top 1% is a little bit over 25%. We'll go over these numbers a little bit more. Don't worry. You don't have to write them down. I'm going to say them again. Okay. People in the top 1% on average per person in the top 1% pay $653,000 in taxes a year. It's a lot. The average for all taxpayers is $14,279. The bottom 50% of people, on average, $667 that they pay in taxes. Once again, your top 1%, the average tax rate is 25.9%. And this is not taking into account all of the earned income credits and stuff like that, because it's showing the bottom 50% at 3.3%. And that actually gets closer to zero or goes negative some years. Okay. Here's another interesting thing. People will come to you with this idea that taxes are just going up on the middle class and on the poor people. These rich people, they're paying less taxes. And that's because, you know, coming out of the 50s, when everything was right with the world, we had these really high tax rates, and they decided they were going to raise taxes on the poor people and decrease taxes on the rich people. And that's how we got to the point that we're at right now. Well, starting in 1979, the lowest quintiles average federal tax rate was at about 9%. And up to 2019, that number has decreased from 9% down to the 0.5% that we talked about earlier. In 1979, for the top 1%, that was at 35% average federal tax rate. And it's down to about 30%-ish in 2019. In fact, for all of them, the number has gone down. Is that a good thing? Maybe that sounds like a good thing. The average federal tax rate has actually gone down since 1979 for almost everyone. It's back up from some of its lows and everything like that. But it's not the case that the poor are getting taxed more, that your firefighters and your teachers, they're paying a higher average tax rate than the people in the top 1%. And this is just not right, and we got to do something about it. It's not right. Like, there's data on it. There's numbers. We have numbers on this. Okay. Now, what about fair share? What is your fair share? It's a good question. Good question. The bottom 50%, they pay, the bottom 50% of income earners in the United States, they pay 2.5% of all of the income taxes. Now, this chart is just from 2001 to 2021. That has actually decreased from 2001 to 2021. They were paying about 5%, and that was decreased down to 2.5%. Where did they make up the ground? Was it the middle class, potentially? I don't know. What about 25 to 50? No, that's decreased from 13 down to about 8 as a share of the total amount of taxes. What about the 1 to 5%? What about the top 1%? They were at about 33% in 2001, and now it's up around 46% share of total taxes. When you group people together and you say the top quintile, or you say that you could say the top 20%, you could say the top 50%, they pay almost all of the taxes. That's the point. And so while I look at a survey and it says Americans are unhappy with taxes, when I read that, I'm like, yeah, that's good. We got them right where we want them, libertarians. We can do it. What you actually start to find out is they're not unhappy with taxation itself. A lot of people have been told that they're getting hosed. And unfortunately, the misinformation or the disinformation that's out there is that they're getting hosed by the rich, and that the rich aren't paying their fair share. Well, that's just not true. The rich are definitely paying their fair share. Look at this. Top 50%, 97.7% of all taxes. 97.7. The top 25%, it just goes down to 89% of all taxes. And it's about 46 if you're in the top 1%. People have been lied to about this, and they consistently get told that rich people are paying lower tax rates than a teacher or a firefighter. How many times have you heard this? Now, they had to invent new numbers to tell people these things. The true tax. When they look at someone's increases in their capital gains, their unrealized capital gains increases, and invent a new tax that taxes unrealized capital gains. That way you can consider that income for someone, and then you create something called their true tax, and then everyone goes out there and parrots these lines that actually people are paying lower rates than teachers and firefighters are. It's not the case. We have all the data on this, all the data. If you're unhappy with the taxes you're paying and you don't think you're getting the value for your money, your enemy is the government, not people who are hyper-productive in our society, not people who have created things that millions of people have found valuable. The blame has been taken off of the people that should be blamed. It's the people that are spending and wasting all of this money and cannot live within their means. And now some of that goes back to the people. In fact, a lot of that blame goes back to the people. Because, to paraphrase Milton Friedman, the American people told the government, we want you to spend more money on us, but we don't want you to raise our taxes. And the government listened. They spend more money, but they've been very reluctant to raise people's taxes. So what do? They print money and they borrow money, but they keep spending more money. And it's the American people that keep telling them to do this, because any time you take away a federal program, or God forbid you talk about not increasing that federal program, the whole world falls apart. It's all over at that point. So maybe this does come back to the American people just being flat out wrong on this thing. Tax Foundation put out this survey saying that tax literacy is low among U.S. taxpayers. They don't exactly understand how a progressive tax system and how marginal taxes work anyway. Suppose your income places you in the 22% bracket. How much of your income do you think is taxed at a rate of 22%? Let me see. 52% of the people responded saying all of it, or they're not sure. But 48% did say just some of it. You know, I did frame it the other way. Okay. What tax rate applies to the top U.S. federal income tax bracket? A lot of people got that right. Okay. And then when you ask how much do you think the top 1% of taxpayers by income account in terms, what's their share of the total taxes? Only 22% of the people actually got that question correct. The largest portion said that they contributed 12% of the total taxes. That's a quarter of the respondents said that the top 1% contributed 12% of the total taxes. The number is actually 46 right now, so they were just off by, you know, a factor of four, but whatever. The other thing you'll hear before we round this out, I know it's a lot of data, a lot of charts, a lot of graphs. I enjoy looking at all these things. It's kind of fun. The thing you'll hear is that we had it right in the 1950s, and everything that's happened since then, that's just because we screwed up. We lowered taxes. Those rich people, they were paying 70, 90%. We had a 90% tax rate for the rich people in the 1950s. And that's why things were so good. I will immediately just show you the graph that says in the 1950s, the top 1% of U.S. households paid an average tax rate of 42%, even though the top marginal tax rate was 90%. Why is that? First off, that top tax rate was on income over $400,000 in 1950s money, which basically no one made, almost no one. That's over $4 million a year in today's money. There might be more people that qualify for that right now, but it's still not a lot. And even then, it was 90% of the money over $400,000, because that's how marginal taxes work. As of this chart right here, they were showing that the average tax rate was 36% for the top 1% of households. I think that's down to 30 or 31 right now. But they never paid 90%. That was not how much money we were taking from people. But people will still use this as an example. In fact, in the 1950s, taxes were higher, but for everyone. They were higher for the poor and the middle class also, which is your biggest base of money. Taxes were higher for those people in the 1950s, and they've come down since then. Maybe that's where the problem is. Or maybe it's the fact that we went off the gold standard, we started printing trillions and trillions of dollars and spending way more money than we took in, and this is all just correlation and causation. I don't know. People will say, well, we're just not taxing people enough. Well, we're still taking in about the same amount that we've always taken in as a percentage of our gross domestic product. All the goods and services that we produce, the productivity of our country, of all the people, we put it together into this thing. We call it gross domestic product, and this is the value that we create. Some of that is contributed by the government, either creating money out of thin air or taxing you and then putting it back into the economy, and they still call it gross domestic product. Kind of annoying that that gets counted in the number, but it's not a massive portion, but it is a portion. We're in the 16s right now for how much of our gross domestic product, how much of our productivity in the United States is the government taking from us and then deciding that they know how to spend it better. We are right in range with where we were within the 50s. Actually, we are right where we were in the 50s for how much we're taking in taxes. What's actually changed is how much of our productivity is getting spent. And instead of 16, which is what we're taking in right now, we're spending 19 of the productivity back out in the economy. That said, I said 19. It's actually 22-23% is what's getting put back out there. The problem is the spending. If you're mad about taxes, you don't want to blame the billionaires. You want to blame the people that are taking the money from you without your permission. And then using it on God knows what. Tons of waste, fraud, and abuse. And you watched a lot of it blow up over the skies in Israel. In fact, you've been watching a lot of it blow up over the skies in Israel over the last 6 months and probably throughout your lifetime. A lot of it's going to the military. A lot of it's going to Social Security now. A lot of it's going to Medicare. And then some of our other hundreds and hundreds to maybe 1,000 departments, depending on the ones that we don't know about. That's where the problem is. Here's another point where the problem is. Since 1970, our outlays, the amount of money we spend, has increased by 3,000% since the 1970s. Our receipts, the amount of money we take in taxation, has increased by 2,200% since the 1970s. You're telling me that we don't have enough money, or that we're not spending enough money to do the things that we need? Those things are up 3,000 and 2,200% respectively. No, it's been plenty. Since the 50s, you're talking about the outlays up 9,000% since then. And the incomes, theft, up 6,600% since then. Interestingly enough, our money supply, the amount of money that we've either created or has been created, is also up 6,800% since the 50s. And our GDP is only up 4,500%. That's where you get the inflation, when you have more money, way more money being created than the amount of product, than the amount of production that's happening in the economy. The problem is not the billionaires. It's not the rich people. If you're mad about taxes, then you're mad at the government. You're mad at the person that's taxing you. How did we get that one wrong? If we can't place the blame on the person that's actually taxing you, then what are we going to do? Coming right up, we're going to talk about some gun rights conversations, some other stuff going on in the news, and then we'll get through Dumb Bleep of the Week. We got 10 items for the live group to vote on.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need.
We want pizza!
You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business, then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.